Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host, Ron Reardon, and our producer, Lee Cantor.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year. Happy, happy.
Happy, 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 happy. We're all back after a nice holiday break. I know, Ron, you were around, but how was everybody's holiday time?
Well, only one of us got hurt. That was me.
Yeah, I think we need an entrepreneur or an inventor to invent something that will let you know when you shouldn't go up and down stairs.
That's it. We need to work on that.
We need a stair sweeper. Well, you know, Ron and I talked about this. I know, Ron, you sprained your ankle, but my wife and I have gone at it about leaving things on the steps because you don't tend to always stare down at your feet when you walk. You usually look forward. And I always get worried like our kids are going to come running down the stairs,
right,
slip on whatever is on the step, and you know then we're going to spend the afternoon in the hospital. But, well, you learn the hard lesson of what can happen there.
Yeah, you know, trying to dodge a bedspread at the very bottom of the stairs while my hands are full of laundry, and all of a sudden there I am on my butt with my left ankle, you know, now is twice the size of my right ankle.
Yeah, I guess the lesson is don't do laundry, Ron.
Don't do laundry. Always send out.
Send it out.
Send it out.
Send it
that's
out.
That's the lesson.
Okay, that's a good one.
All right, Ron. Well, you know, obviously, this is the first time in a while, or we usually have guests lately. We've been on a tear with a lot of good inventors and great entrepreneurs. But today we're going to talk about predictions for 2010. And if everybody's listening, I'm sure we're going to get it right on. So pay attention. And
let's
see if we can create some more winning entrepreneurs. So, Ron, what do you think so far? A couple of things we can talk about.
Well, I think it's going to snow. That's my one first prediction.
Really?
We'll have a snow.
I bet the under. I'm betting the under on the snow.
We got to get the time. Like, what time of day will the snow come in? Because I don't think anybody can get it right with all the radar. So I'm going for like the 6 o'clock time frame. Let's see.
I'm betting on 8.
You're betting on 8? Well, I guess it depends on where you live too, right? So
I'm going to bet no snow.
No snow.
I'm going to go out on a limb.
Oh, wow, that's he's really going for it. All right.
Wow, zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my predictions has to do with patent reform. You know, since I'm a patent agent.
Yeah.
And every year, everybody's gotten, you know, all excited and jumping up and down that they're going to actually change the patent laws. And every year, the patent law bill just kind of dies in Congress. So I predict that in 2010, that patent reform will either pass or not pass.
There you go. You heard it here first.
Well, Ron, all right, expand on this. For people that don't follow patent reform, look, I'm in this business like you, and I read some stuff about it, but believe me, I don't read every inch of all the endless stuff that goes on with patent reform. But what's the big highlight or key that inventors should be aware of?
What do they want reformed?
Well, the inventors don't want reform. They want to keep it just like it is.
Right.
Okay, that's the sticking point. And there's a lot of nuances in the law. Some of them have to do with putting a limit on, you know, infringement damages and things like that. But the thing that gets all the inventors excited is getting rid of first to invent and replacing it with first to file. And
okay.
And it appears that first inventor to file is actually going to be in the law if it does get passed.
So breaking this down, so if I have an invention, mm-hmm, I actually know that I've got documentation other than a patent filing that I've created this product, I've had design engineer work done, I've kept an inventor's journal, I've done all the things that can show I've done it. You come along whenever after, file a patent, and you're saying that with this reform, you're going to be the one who's going to be able to secure a patent and not me.
That's correct. Is that the way it is now is whoever can prove they invented it first by having a real good, you know, journal that's bound like a book and then ink and pages numbered, et cetera. But the way that it's going to be in the future is if you invent something and I invent the same thing, and you invented it first, and I invented it maybe 6 months later. You're working on yours, I'm working on mine, and I rush to the patent office and put a patent application in for it. You're out of luck, even though you invented it first.
Wow.
That's a little scary.
That's a little tough, huh?
Yeah.
You really think that's going to pass or be one of the components of what gets through?
If we ever get a patent bill passed, that's going to be in there.
But who benefits from that? What kind of company?
Large companies.
Large companies that can just throw out lots of patents?
Right.
Well, they can afford to file patents.
Lots of patents.
Yeah. And a lot of small companies, small businesses that are just getting started, and they're constantly tweaking and refining, you know, their prototypes or whatever, they're going to have a tougher time actually getting investment if they have to file, you know, a series of patents that are just showing it. Well, here's the concept on the napkin, and then right. you know, here it is. You know,
it reminds me of the healthcare where it's like kind of defensive patent.
Yeah,
you know, you have to have defensive medicine right. to protect yourself, and now they're going to have to kind of be protect themselves with lots of patents.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more provisional patent applications filed. You know, as the invention progresses in development. But it is going to impact small companies that are trying to get investors interested.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what I think a lot of people don't see. They don't see the reverberations, like that domino effect, that when something happens, it yeah. affects this group, but then it, you know, and obviously there are winners and losers. I think what I'm hearing, Ron, from my side is, you know, inventors, if you've got an idea and you think it's good or you can somehow validate it's good, you better go ahead and file a provisional, or at least get something filed, because you know, if you don't act on it, somebody else is going to, regardless of whether you've been working on that thing for
right.
10 years or something. So
yeah, and part of the impetus on this is the rest of the world is first to file, and the United States is the only country that's first to invent. But then when you look at the economic impact that the United States has because of its strong patent system versus right. the rest of the world, it's like, why shouldn't the rest of the world get with us instead of us, you know, getting yeah. harmonizing with them?
It's like the metric system, right? We're like right. one of the few countries left.
We're the last one standing, right?
So, but you know, yet we still stand alone. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I see the, you know, the pluses and minuses. I think that, you know, from my perspective, when I talk to inventors, it's good in a way because it maybe it forces those on the fringe to take action. But
right.
the bad side is that if they take action too quickly and they jump into this business that's risky too quickly, then that could cause a lot of financial right. hardship. So
yeah, like you said, there are pluses and minuses, because I know when I work with an inventor, they say something like, you know, I've been working on this invention for 10 years. Then I kind of shudder, because I kind of wonder if the market window has come and gone. Yeah, that they really shouldn't procrastinate too long.
Yeah, well, that's...
All right, so pay attention 2010 for patent reform. What else you got? What prediction?
Well, Jim talked about the retail buyers.
Yeah, I think this is going to be interesting for people to learn about. Obviously, everybody that creates a product ultimately wants to sell it to somebody,
right.
and that's going to usually be, you know, retail chains or corporations through licensing, which ultimately wind up coming out either in retail or, you know, in a commercial application,
sure.
like to businesses, selling to businesses. But, you know, I talk to retail buyers regularly, and last year it was just a mess. I mean, retail, the economy was terrible.
Right.
And what happens at retail is that the retailers get stuck with a lot of current inventory.
Right.
And they are not allowed to buy new stuff.
Until that other stuff sells through.
Right. And when you have that kind of situation, when you call up a buyer, even with a really good product, they may say, this is great, I love it, I just don't have the open-to-buy dollars. I don't
right
have the
now,
opportunity
right.
to buy it now. Call me back in 3 months or 6 months. And unfortunately, that prevents a lot of great ideas from coming to fruition. But this year already, I'm seeing more interest level. And a lot of buyers are saying, you know, it's still tough, but, you know, we think the worst is behind us. And so, yeah, let's take a look at what you have.
Wow.
And so it's starting to definitely brightening up.
Well, you think maybe a combination of them moving the inventory to either Overstock.com or Marshalls and then this pent-up demand that's out there is all going to kind of be like a perfect storm that's going to make 2010 really great for retail?
Yeah, and Ron, it's funny you said Overstock and some of these places, because I am getting, you know, a lot of calls from inventors that I've never talked to, as well as ones that I have worked with that have a lot of excess inventory because they went ahead, brought in inventory at some point in 2009, couldn't move it through the traditional channels. And believe me, the Overstocks, the Tuesday Mornings, the TJ Maxx and Marshalls, these guys love moving you know, merchandise, and we'll do it at a discount. But the only thing is, you're going to take a bath on the profit side. I mean, if you paid $5 for something, and you were usually selling it to a retailer for $10, you may have to sell it to them for the same $5 you paid.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, they got their whole thing is selling it for 50% off,
right.
or we got overstock. And so I guess that's a benefit if you have, you know, a garage full of stuff and you want to get rid of these, you know, these retailers are going to swoop on in and try to take advantage of the weaknesses, and that's just business.
Right. Is that a good strategy to do? Is it better to hold on, or is it better just to unload it and...
Well, you know, that's debatable. I mean, if you're trying to build a brand, I think the last thing you want to do with your first run merchandise is go to an overstock.com because the perception is that it's
it didn't sell, right.
It closed out. But if you go on a site like Overstock, you'll see every big brand company that we buy
out there, right?
And they truly move last year's merchandise, last year's, you know, whatever, because they go into new models. So, but if you're an inventor and you got into this and you really want to get out of this and you don't have plans to build a sustainable business, I don't know. I guess I would look at that option, and I would definitely want to move merchandise. Or if you just want to generate some cash, but you do have to watch your brand and think about how that's going to affect your brand.
Yeah, because, you know, you mentioned Tuesday morning. You know, my wife and I bought a wine cooler device, you know, that I guess, you know, looks a little bit bigger than a microwave oven at a Tuesday morning. And it was a really good buy and you know, good quality stuff. But obviously somebody bought too many wine cooler appliances, and they had to move it out.
You know? So was it a good price?
Yeah, it was an excellent price.
And those are great places to shop. I mean, you know, you walk into – and I like TJ Maxx and Marshall's the best, especially for clothing because, you know, I used to sell to them for years and years, and they definitely sell, like, you know, first-run merchandise. The whole perception was, oh, it was – defective, or the stitching was off, or something. But they actually sell, like, you know, Ralph Lauren. I know is one of their biggest vendors, and so Ralph Lauren, you know, they'll make, you know, like Ron, you're wearing a polo, you know, jacket today. Well, if they make a million of those things, and only sell a half a million,
right?
TJ Maxx and Marshalls comes in, buys them at a discount, and sells them, you know, where you may have paid, say, you know, $150 for that jacket. You go to Marshall's, it's, you know, $69.99.
Ron didn't pay $150. I'll tell you right now.
He got it at TJ Maxx.
No, I got this at Marshall's because my wife and I shop at Marshall's all the time. Yeah, yeah. I would not buy this at, you know,
at full price.
Yeah, whenever I look at the prices at Marshall's and says, you know, hey, the normal retail is, you know, $85 or whatever, I'm like, who pays this?
Yeah, you know? People pay it.
Because I'll buy it for, you know, $19.99.
You're not going to the Ralph Lauren boutique?
No.
And that's why a lot of people, like, I mean, obviously there are people that want to have things right when they come out. You know, a lot of women want, you know, the fashionable stuff. But if you're willing to wait, it's not like, you know, that jacket was made 3 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, it's seasonal. So if they didn't sell it in the fall,
who cares?
In the winter, they're going to have it in TJ Maxx and Marshall's. And, you know, I get a lot of, you know, ties, you know, dress shirts, slacks. I mean, all the biggest brands you can buy. But you're right. I'm not going to go pay $200 for pair of slacks so I can get them for, you know, $60.
Right.
And I know that they really were selling for $200. So those prices they put on there were really
it's the same
pretty
quality.
Accurate.
Yeah. Because, you know, you talk about Marshall's, you know, my wife shops at Marshall's almost every week. And, you know, when I go in there looking for slacks, you know, I'll sit there and say, okay, you know, this one's $29.99. Nah, this $19.99. No. $14.99. Okay. Now you're starting to talk. And every now and then I'll get one for $4.99.
Wow.
That's been there for a while, and I just want to get it off the shelf.
You get, and, you know, when they're on, like, Twitter, you know, you see them, they're always, you know, they put, like, special deals on. And they, you know, they have, but the perception with those stores is that they only sell inexpensive price points. But, you know, you go in there, they sell $500 things, $800 things. As long as it's a true discount, like a 50-60% off from normal price, they'll sell it.
So. Well, you know, their advertising is kind of educating people as to how they get the merchandise. They have this one where the fellow's from England, and he wants to order 100 of these shirts. And since he's from England, the one kind of looks like a 7. And so he ends up with 700 of them instead of 100. And then so Marshall's ends up with the 600 extras. So their advertising is letting people know they do have quality stuff.
Right. So the whole big thing with retail this year is that you know, there's definitely going to be opportunity as the year progresses, and the off-price retailers are definitely going to benefit from, you know, overstock situations, and inventors themselves can, if they need to move merchandise, you know, will have some opportunities if the product's right to move them through some of these channels.
Okay. Well, one of the trends that you mentioned is that we'll continue to see an increase with women inventors. What do you think is contributing to that?
Well, I think that, you know, women inventing and entrepreneurship is just getting a lot of press. I mean, every time I open up a magazine, I go on, you know, any website, there's all these women, you know, womenpreneur, mompreneur. I mean, there's like 10 different names for, you know, womenpreneur type, you know, these monikers that are used. But women, you know, have obviously always been in business, but now we're really taking the forefront. And I think I'm seeing with my business, Ron, and maybe with yours, that a vast majority of the people that approach me now are women, and most of my clients are women, and it's not a surprise, and I think that's definitely going to continue. And even here in Atlanta, I see groups like Startup Chicks and some other organizations that really promote and rally women around the idea of entrepreneurship. So I definitely see that. I'm making this prediction right here, right now, Lee.
What?
That, you know, women and in inventing is going to continue to really increase substantially this year.
And I agree with that because you're right. You know, more and more of my clients are female. And I know that when I first joined the Inventors Club here in Georgia, there were 12 white guys, you know, from 40 to 60 around the table. And that was pretty much the club. And now more and more you see females increasing the mix.
Yeah, and again, it's not a surprise. And, you know, a lot of the times, you know, a few years ago when I talked to women, they always came up with products that helped them through their day.
Right, that was very personal for their own situation.
Right, like, you know, mom's home with the kids, so she needs to come up with solutions how to, you know, for baby products or, you know, stroller ideas or baby bottle ideas or clothing ideas or whatever. But, and then they would come up with housewares ideas. But now women are coming up with medical devices and high-tech products, and it's not limited to what we traditionally think is, you know, a woman's type
of
product.
Well, you know, Kevlar was invented by a woman, okay?
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Did not know that.
Yeah, she worked at DuPont. She was a chemist, and she was working with some fibers, and when the results came out, she couldn't believe it, and she didn't tell anybody. It's like, you know, is this an anomaly? And so she redid the test, and it came out, you know, strong, and finally, you know, shared it with some colleagues and everything. But, yeah, the Kevlar was invented by a woman.
Well, now, what percentage of women are in the inventors group now?
Oh, it's probably, I'd say, about 20%.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty dramatic from 0 to 20%.
Well, I'm going to be speaking there, Ron, in 2 weeks. So we'll. Sure. So you're coming. I know you'll come.
I'll be there.
And
bring all the ladies.
Bring them in. And I think we'll see easily a 20% plus. We'll have to kind of report back on that. But I think you're going to see that increase this whole year.
Yeah, because I know historically, from a patent standpoint, it was something around 5% of the patents were actually issued to women historically. But I think that's moved up. It's getting close to 10%.
Yeah.
Wow, that's still way low.
Yeah.
Still way low, but, you know, for them, there's. But they're riding this PR wave right now.
Right.
I mean, you go on any of the social media sites, whether it's Twitter,
there's
Facebook.
There's a ton of mommy blogs and mommy
all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, that's fine with me. You know, a good invention is a good invention. So it doesn't matter who it comes from, kids, you know, men, women, it doesn't make a difference to me. As long as somebody's got a good idea, they should be out there pursuing it.
All right. And so we're going to check next year to see how many members.
Okay.
That'll be the metric.
Well, you know, the very little trivia here, the very first windshield wiper for a vehicle, way back when vehicles, you know, were just emerging, was created by a woman.
How do you know this?
I do patent trivia, okay?
Patent trivia?
Yeah, it's like the
it's a new drinking game.
I mean, this should be a no-brainer, but the first dishwasher that was patented was invented by a woman.
Right. Where was their husband?
Kind of logical. No.
Well, I can tell you, I've met and talked to people that claim to have invented everything that we know. I have met people. You must get these kind of funny calls where people claim they invented
like
computer
the
or
straw.
The
I invented
you know,
the straw.
Whatever. It's like, but I came up with the idea first. Well, you know, I guess in Ron's new world of the patent reform,
won't matter anymore.
It won't matter. It's did you file for a patent? Otherwise, it's not
doesn't
yours
count.
Anymore.
Well, it's like my wife's from Mexico, and she's always telling me of everything that was invented in Mexico first.
Right.
And she told me, you know, that color television was invented in Mexico. I'm like, no. So I did some research, and son of a gun, she was right. Color television was actually invented in Mexico first.
Wow.
Never question your wife. That's the only thing, Ron. You know better.
That's right.
But I think overall, too, Ron, and yet another prediction I think you'll share with me is that inventing overall is going to continue to be very robust. It's going to continue to grow. I continue to get more and more emails and phone calls from people, and because of the poor economy in great part.
Yeah. Right, so there's more opportunity now.
Well, I mean, think about it. If you're either been fired, laid off, your company went out of business, or you're just fearful that your company is going to implode or something, then you may step back and say, you know what? Maybe I'm in my 40s or 50s or 60s, and it's not easy to go back out and get a job. Yeah, I've got a few dollars in the bank. I want to go out and try to pursue
take
something.
A shot, right?
And some people just want to work and live their own lives their own way, and creating products and licensing them or bringing them to market gives them a chance to run their own company
right.
from home, at least initially.
Yeah, I've seen a direct correlation between how bad the economy is and how many inventors are wanting to get patents and pursue their inventions. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as the economy started tanking, you know, my business started increasing tremendously.
Huh, that's
and
interesting.
So it's just one of those things of, I don't know if I want the recession to end or not, you know, but I'm hoping that it does. But there's a lot of folks, for the reasons that Jim just gave, said, you know, I've had this idea for a while, I'd better act on it.
Right. Now, because the economy seems to be picking up a little bit, are companies investing more in R&D than they were maybe in the last year or the year before?
Well, I think with R&D, it's traditional in recessions that large companies just lay off their R&D staff, which is kind of dumb. But the good thing for, you know, individual inventors is that means that more and more companies are having to go to the model that Procter & Gamble pioneered of open innovation, mm-hmm. of saying, we, you know, inventors, come to us. You know, we need your products in order to grow our company.
Right.
And before, big companies just absolutely would not talk to an individual inventor.
Yeah, very closed and insular type right. of mentality. But, you know, also, Ron, piggybacking on that, I see more and more retailers having contests and promotions, like Bed Bath & Beyond does them, and PetSmart, and lots of retailers are saying, hey, you know, inventors, if you got a great product, submit it, and we'll take a look at it. You could win cash. You could win opportunities to be in the stores. So I'm seeing that on the rise as well. And that, again, is those retailers saying, you know, we need to see more things. And maybe they're not getting as much innovation from the big corporations, but they're looking smartly to the individuals who come up with great ideas all day long.
Yeah, you're on target there. You know, most inventors are not just one-hit wonders. They don't have just one idea. They have lots of ideas. And we're seeing more and more of these product hunts from the companies that you just mentioned. And to me, if I, you know, was inventing today, instead of inventing something and then hoping to find a home for it, I would wait for one of these product hunts to come out, you know, from Staples or Bed Bath & Beyond or Petco or whatever, where they say, look, we want a new pet idea.
Right.
I would start thinking about stuff for pets and submit it, you know.
And there are people that,
because they're looking for it.
There are people that do that, they're serial inventors, so to speak, and they cannot sleep unless they've got, you know, something coming up in their mind. And, you know, we know a few inventors like that.
When they have those contests, what level of an idea do they want? Do they just want an idea, a concept, or do they want an actual working prototype? Or
I've known people to submit, and typically the best way to do it is to have a prototype, preferably packaged. But if you have a concept or an idea and it's worthy, I mean, you'd want to submit that. But each one of them has their own particular rules and stuff and how to submit. But you know, if you got a good idea and you can get it down at least on paper and get some rough drawings or get a prototype, that's right. The best way to get in front of someone. Wow.
Yeah, and one of the earliest companies that I'm familiar with that started this trend of, you know, we're looking for an idea was Staples. You know, Staples had several years ago said, you know, we want an office product or something that right. we can sell in our store. And they offered money, you know, I forget it was $20,000, $25,000 right. if you got it. And the fellow that won that had this thing called the Word Lock. And it was, you know, it was a combination lock, but it used letters instead of right. numbers. And so you could put, you know.
Or you can spell a word.
You could put, right. you know, right. Susie on there or whatever, and that would be what would open the lock.
Oh, that's a great
and
idea.
Last I heard, he's made a gazillion yeah. dollars.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You're saying that just gets me that, you know, it's just something so simple.
That is. I mean, well, how did no one think of that?
Well, that's the thing. Probably a lot of people thought of it, but they don't wow. act on it. This is one of the bad parts about this business is that, unfortunately, a lot of people do come up with great ideas, and they just don't either have the resources or they don't think to step
How
up.
How did Master Lock not jump on that?
It's one of those that they hit their head like, duh, why didn't we?
Why are we only using numbers?
Because they're, you know, it's complacency. They're selling a lot of, you know, standard wow. locks. Why think Man. About changing that yeah. model, you know, making money?
Because, you know, one of the secrets to successful inventing is to look for people struggling with something and figure out a way to get around it. And so, you know, whenever my wife and I go to our off-site storage, you know, I've got a regular old combination
right.
lock, and I'll sit there and I'll look at it. Luckily, I've got the combination in my PDA, but I was like, okay, is it 12 to the left and 30 to the right and 36 to the, you know, I'm trying to remember what was the combination to right. this thing. And with a word lock, it's going to be a name that you right. remember, and voila, you know.
Yeah. So, well, you're not going to be able to open that today because it's going to snow and freeze. But Lee says nothing's going to happen. So go into your outside the storage shed now when you get home. Ron, I think one area that we definitely should address, and it will not be a surprise as a prediction, but I'll still make it anyway, is the proliferation of social media marketing and how inventors can take more charge of creating their own PR and awareness of their products by being very active on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, you name it.
Yeah, because this is not in the world of invention, but when you look at the power of something like YouTube, are you familiar with Susan Boyle from England?
Yeah, the singer
from On Idol, yeah.
She was in a contest. She didn't win. She placed second. Okay, right. But when she came out, everybody looks at this 47-year-old lady and like, you know, what are you doing here for all these young pups? And then she opens up her mouth and starts singing. Everybody's blown away.
Right.
Well, she's released an album just before Christmas, and for 4 weeks, her album was number one, blowing out all these talented artists. She sold over 1 million records. Okay.
Wow.
And her YouTube, I forget the number, but something like 70 million hits.
Yeah. It is a cool, if you've listened to it, I've listened to it a lot of times. Yeah, it's cool.
Because it's very inspirational. Because
you don't, you know, it's one of those you just don't expect it.
Right.
And, you know, then you see Simon, he's like, his eyes like going, oh my God, he's bugging out. Everyone's just like dumbfounded about, you know, what's coming out.
And
of
then her
ladies.
Album actually sold. It wasn't just the YouTube, you know,
right.
She actually monetized it.
She's got a tremendous fan base, and the album's really good. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You bought it?
Yeah, I bought it.
Wow.
And they had a special on TV Guide, okay? And there was one fan there, it was a guy, and he says, you know, the reason that I like Susan Boyle, because it makes all of us realize that it's never too late to realize your dream.
Right.
And that's really the emotional connection. Is there's this 47-year-old lady
that
was a charity worker, okay,
right.
Unemployed.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, she's got this tremendous talent. She's been singing since she was 12.
Right.
And everybody just connected with it.
She's a rock star.
She really is.
Now she is, for sure.
Well, not a rock star.
And, you know, and so you're right. Inventors and entrepreneurs can leverage things like social media and YouTube to really get some buzz about their product.
They have to. It's not even a, well, I think I should, they have to
they better
figure
be doing
that into
it, right.
their day, whether it's a half hour a day or 2 hours a day. It's got to become part of your work day like everything else is part of your work day because, A, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it doesn't cost anything. It's your time. One could argue time is money, but, you know, that's good money spent.
But that's their asset they have the most of is time, not money, typically.
That's right, because a lot of times these inventors, like I said, if you're laid off or you're not working and you're around all day, I mean, why would you not spend that time? And sometimes it's good to consult with somebody to help you set up the proper pages and learn how to use social media effectively. You can't just get on there and try to just sell. People get turned off. Social media is really about
helping,
you know, yeah, what's
sharing,
going on,
right.
Here's what's happening in this, you know, with my family, my friends or whatever. But if you're smart about it, I've seen many inventors get great jump shots and be very successful just on the internet alone. And then, of course, they have their own websites, they sell their products from those sites. So a lot of people do this literally from their computer and make a nice living. So that, you know, the prediction, of course, is that, you know, social media for inventors is going to continue to become more prevalent and more important to their success.
I think that's an on-target prediction. You know, and the first cousin to that is leveraging the internet to really shorten your production, your cycle for getting a product, you know, developed.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, you can send something over to China and go back and forth and get something done in, you know, a couple of months that normally would have taken a couple of years. You know?
Right.
Yeah, just using technology. Like, I mean, a lot of I've used Skype to work with factories. So whereas, say, you know, 15 years ago, I had to get on a plane, go to China, and sit down with a factory owner and review a product. Now I can go on Skype. We can do video. The factory owner or worker can have the product on a table in front of me as I'm looking at it on my computer, and then I can say, well, can you change this? Can you do this? And you know how much time that saves?
And
money it saves?
Right.
It's huge. So that's – and I have inventors that I work with that also do that, or they communicate in those ways. And yes, you have to take advantage of technology, and it will show.
So the person in China could, like, hold it up close to the camera, and they could zoom in, and you can go, hey, can you turn it just a little?
Right.
And you could, so you're examining it almost like you're looking at it.
Right. I mean, that's the next best thing. And you can say, can you make these changes? Can you do this or that?
Right.
Instead of emailing back and forth or sending a sample by mail, and it takes, you know, a week, no doubt.
Tremendous, you know, shortening of the development cycle.
Yeah.
So what else, Ron? What other big bang?
I was just thinking that, you know, because of the use of Skype and the internet, I guess we can predict that the airlines and the hotels' revenue is going to go down, right?
Yeah, it's,
I think so.
You know, and I guess, believe me, they look at that stuff, right? Like
they must hate it
every little drop. But the one good thing I've seen too lately, I don't know, this is not a prediction, but I've seen airfares, I guess at least for the places I've been looking to go, have seemed to be much cheaper. Hotels seem to be more reasonable. I mean, you know, going to New York, Chicago, and some places like that, I've found extraordinary deals. And I see some of these hotels, and Expedia is doing this now. I don't know if you guys have seen, where if you book a trip, they'll send you like these email coupons. So if you, they'll give you like credits or like a, you know, $20 or $50 towards your next flight or a hotel package. So I'm starting to see some creative ways for them to fill rooms and try to get occupancy back up.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at the big convention cities, you know, like Orlando or Las Vegas, you know, in Las Vegas they've had such a downturn and such, you know, laying people off, and the housing market's terrible, and you know, people going to the casinos for whatever reason are low. They will offer you just like, please show up. You know, $29 for a hotel room. You know,
it used to be like that. Remember back in the 80s?
Yeah, remember they used to have those specials for Las Vegas. It'd be like basically free, and they give you free chips
right? Yeah, on the flight, right? They give you, you know, comp coupons and stuff. And now, then of course, Vegas got mega hot, and you know, and then every hotel was, you know, you didn't get the $30 and $50 hotel rooms. They're now $150, $250. I mean, we all go. I mean, I can't remember the last time I paid less than, you know, $100 and something for a hotel room in Vegas.
Right.
But, you know, I think the whole year run, we're going to, you know, I'm very optimistic. I've always been optimistic. Even in the downturn, I always felt like if smart business people, smart entrepreneurs start planning during the downturn, that when things get better, they're going to be the first to ride.
To benefit, right.
The wave. The people that, you know, kind of crawled and hid away and were fearful are going to be playing catch up. So I think that.
Yeah, that's the real danger. And, you know, even Jeff Bezos of Amazon mentioned that during a recession is the best time to really move forward with a new concept.
Yeah, like those, how many of those Kindles?
I have one.
Yeah, I got one for my mother-in-law, and it is, if you have seen it, Ron.
Yeah, I've seen it online. I've not seen a real
tiny.
One.
I'll bring one in next time.
It is. Okay. It's great. It's a great tool.
Right.
And, you know, my mother-in-law is a flight attendant for JetBlue, so she doesn't want to lug around, you know, these,
a bunch,
you know,
of
5 pounds
books, right.
Worth of books. It's perfect for her, so that's why we figured she would get it. She loves reading. So.
Yeah, I'll probably have to get one of those because I enjoy reading.
Yeah, and it's an instant. Like, you're reading an article, oh, that's a good book. You can literally a minute later be reading that book.
Yeah, you download it because it's all, you know, you get your Wi-Fi connection.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah, you just scroll. You
I've been on an airplane, you know, reading that magazine in the airplane. And they're like, oh, here's a new book by this person. And while waiting for the plane to take off, ordered it and read it on the flight.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, I'm normally a late adopter, but I might have to kind of break the trend and actually.
Yeah, well, the thing now is there's a bunch of them now. You have choice.
Sony's got one. I see, like, I think it was Borders that was selling the Sony one at Christmas time.
There's one called a Nook, and there's an e-reader.
Yeah.
So there's
Sony might be the e-reader, although I'm not sure. But the Kindle is, I mean, it's razor thin. It's small.
And it could hold like 1,500 books, like more than you'd ever be able to read.
I mean, so it's great. But there's a lot of cool things going on. But I definitely think, you know, it's going to be a good year, Ron. And it's as good as people want to try to make it, as long as they get the knowledge they need. They, you know, think smart and prepare themselves. There's no reason why we shouldn't have, you know, more winners this year.
I agree with that. You know, it's been kind of a tough year for 2009, but 2010 looks very bright.
What's going to be the next Snuggie?
I don't know. I mean, if I had the idea, I wouldn't be telling you guys because I'd want to go cash in on it.
I can predict that it's not going to be the Chia Pets. Okay?
It's not going to be a Snuggie. Yeah. We're done with the Snuggie.
Well,
and Billy Bass. Don't forget that. Okay, well, this has been another great episode of Launch with Jim DeBetta and with our producer, Lee Cantor, signing off.